Hi, I'm Neo Nix. After every live show, we found ourselves having intense post-show conversations. So we decided to leave the record button on and let you listen in. So this is Truth Lies Shenanigans, the after show. In our live show, season 3, episode 5, our spotlight guest was actor, podcaster, gamer, and voiceover artist Jessica Lynn Verdi. Our main topic was the atrocities in the Catholic Church. And in Quickfire, we covered an unvaccinated patient being denied a transplant, the deleted wedding photo story, and the beef between B2K bandmates Little Fizz and Omarion. And also Shenanigans, the game show, where we played 7-Second Challenge, where Gianni Storm hilariously attempted a handstand. But in the after show, we got to talking about TV shows and movies like Matrix 4 and Squid Games. Then Jessica shared a funny porn story. And the conversation got a little more serious, with the ladies on the panel sharing stories of having to deal with the Harvey Weinsteins of the world and discussing the effectiveness of the Me Too movement. Take a listen.
Let's go back.
J to the J.
Baby J.
Also, since you were, you know, a sports star, we can call you JV.
So JV, that is one of the things that we go by. Is definitely JV. For sure.
JV.
For sure. My brother's Joe Verdi. So there's the whole... Yeah, he was the tight end and the catcher and the pitcher, all that.
All right. Although I like Big Baby J. I like Big Baby J.
Big Baby J is on brand also. I like it. Johnny, I love that you like tried to do the handstand. You're like, all right.
I should try.
I was like, let me do something. Man, because I know
honestly. Johnny, honestly, like, I could do it back in my cheerleader days, but we talking, like, you know, 40 plus is Lizzie right now. I would have been like, Neo, you first.
I'm saying somebody's got to lose. Challenges are complex. They're hard to do.
I love like, she's getting all the physical ones, though. And it's totally crazy.
Like, every time, too.
Oh, really? But, Jessica, please be advised, he cheats every week.
Do not.
I feel like she like every name like the name like Neo and a favorite film like Matrix, someone's gotta, you know, hack the code.
Exactly. Somebody's gotta hack.
That's why Lawrence Fishburne was like, okay, so y'all excluded me from the most recent release. Boom.
What happened there?
He got old and pudgy.
I have no idea.
Pudgy. That's what I think happened, actually.
Almost twice what the does man that have that to he do? Was in the original. Because what of does the action have to scenes do with... required.
But he could have aged and gotten fat. Well, no, I guess if it's apocalyptic, right. Though, you wouldn't age and get
If you tell him ahead of time that he is expected to be a part of this, you give him an opportunity to get in shape.
Maybe he didn't want to.
You think Keanu wasn't laying on the couch? You think Keanu wasn't laying on the couch?
His new girlfriend?
He probably
was.
He's sitting on the couch. He's doing combat training, weapons training, stunt driving. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Because he has another series. However, Lawrence Fishburne is on Blackish. Like, it's not like he's not working. It's just a series that doesn't require
him. He's not doing Matrix.
Yeah. Like, if they had told him, I'm sure the brother would have been like, all right.
I'm curious with how they're going to play it up.
I'm curious how his character
doesn't make sense in the new movie. It said that his character in the last film managed to survive the events of the original trilogy in the climatic Battle of Zion.
Because therefore, Neo and what's her name? I forget her name. I don't know why. But they aged.
Trinity.
Thank you. Yeah.
But also, he has on a full black armor, and all he's basically doing is this.
Well, I think we need to all watch the movie.
Like, come on.
And figure it out.
I ain't watching that shit.
Tanya Harding, they fucking superimposed her face on us.
Not the Tanya Harding reference. What?
I'm just saying, it was the most uncanny valley shit I ever seen where she's like doing axles and it's Margot Robbie's face. Like, it's weird.
That was crazy. Weird. That was very weird.
In my opinion, don't try even. Like, listen, I get it. It was almost great. and then it was off-putting. It was Uncanny Valley. It was like, oh, that's not a human. So weird.
That's deep.
I'm only laughing because it's Tonya Harding. Like, it's Tonya Harding, so that's why I'm laughing. Good one. Yeah.
No,
good
that's
one.
Fair. It's good one. Fair.
Good one.
I just watched. Oh, go ahead. No, Neo, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so was there something anybody wanted to talk about, to bring up?
Well, I was going to say, I watched Queen Pins. Did anyone have it? Has anyone seen Queen Pins?
I have not. It's on my list, though. Is it good?
What is that? Enjoyable. I am a Kristen Bell fan, and Kirby Howell Baptiste is like one of her BFFs because she's been in every single show that Kristen Bell has done. And they're basically coupon Queen Pins that figured out how to sell coupons and make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Essentially,
I didn't watch it.
You said, who is Kristen? Did you say who is Kristen Bell?
I get her confused. Is she the one that's married to?
You're not the first person to say that. Like,
is she the one that's married to Dax Shepard?
Yes, which is very funny because normally if people say it the other way around, people are like, "Oh, who's she married to?"
Oh, that's right.
His career is built on who's that guy?
Built on her. That's true. 100%. Actually,
that's why he had her on the podcast.
There's that show, the new show, Family Game Night or Family something.
Yeah.
Game Night. And I've watched it a couple of times.
What's that on?
Kristen Bell is great on the show, but Dax Shepard sucks so bad.
What just, is that on?
He tries too hard.
I want to say it's NBC.
It probably is NBC because I think Good Place was NBC. So she's got she's in cahoots over there. Well, I don't even know if it's contract because she's meeting the right people. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I should have prefaced this for Jessica. Like, I really only kind of watch sports and killer shows. Like, I'm a Discovery ID person, Dateline, Killer in the Winter, American Monster, Snapped. That's my kind of genre of shows. But I do watch some regular weekly shows. I watch This Is Us.
I watched Squid Game.
Yes, we have to talk about Squid Games.
I watched that yesterday.
Okay, so everyone but
Rob B hasn't seen it. Rob B hasn't seen it yet.
Oh, come on, forget Rob B.
I haven't either, but I'm not worried about it. So
We got to screenshot my reaction and Rob B's reaction because it was in, Kahoot. Like,
but no, everyone went.
What?
Forget Rob B.
It's like the Hunger Games 2.0, basically.
So you did see it,
Johnny. You know what it's like? It's like the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie from the 80s. Running Man? Yeah.
One of my favorite movies.
The Running Man. It's like The Running Man.
Okay, so very dystopian, but for food is what I'm getting from the little stuff.
This is for money, Robbie. It's
a little different than Running Man, but it's it was only, I really didn't think it was great, actually. I predicted literally everything that was going to happen. I was talking to my wife. I'm like, this is the, and everything that I predicted as I was saying what is happening. I was like, oh God. Okay. So this is a predictable show.
So let me ask you the question then. What makes it, cause it basically went viral, which is what, and from what little I know about the behind the scenes with Netflix is when a show hits, everyone's like, okay, great. Let's capitalize on that. Like I knew someone who sold a show to Netflix and I'm giving a lot of preface for this, but they sold a show to Netflix. And they've had it in rewrites for a year. And then every time a show hit, they're like, oh, let's pass it off to the Bridgerton people. Let's see what they think. And this show is not Bridgerton. It's like a fucking lesbian horror Western thing. But they're like, they're trying to capitalize on the success of it.
It was unexpectedly violent is what it was. It was just unexpectedly violent and unnecessarily violent, actually.
Yeah.
But I think it's a story that isn't in the present. It's a story that we haven't seen over and over again. So I think at least that's what I interpreted from people telling me you need to watch it.
But just not now, you mean?
But not like not this. Like not right now. Not right now.
But as far as the story, I mean, it just followed a basic standard. I mean,
I don't think there was no twists and turns. I think the first episode was
more
great.
About plot was weak.
I think the first episode was good.
Concept was good.
And then you maybe want to close your ears, Robbie. I think by the 15 minute point of the second episode, I was just like, okay, this is dry. I'm done. I'm done. Yeah.
It keeps you on your feet.
Because you want to know what happens at the end, but the thing is, everything that you think is going to happen happens. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
So I have something that Jessica has actually experienced to talk about. And because neither of us have watched the Squid Games. So, Dude, I have to ask you, what's the first RPG that you played?
Ooh, the first RPG I played was Pathfinder, which is basically D&D light, kind of, depending on, you know, I think, like, well, I should say, it was like we played like a couple of sessions of it. And then like, so I have never been a part of a game that has gone on forever unless it's for entertainment, like on a channel or on a, you know, podcast. So every time I've started with the same group of friends, we'll like fall off the wagon for a couple of months and like, oh, let's start a new one. Let's do a post-apocalyptic one or whatever. So like we've tried different systems throughout my tenure, but the first one was Pathfinder.
Nice. Gianni, I think you can relate to me on this, although maybe not. What's RPG?
Role-playing game. Yep.
I have no idea. I had no idea.
It's a type of game where you kind of play as a character in a story.
Happy birthday to her, by the way. RPG. You're welcome. All right. So are you familiar with Critical Role? Did you see any of the payment breakdowns that came out about Twitch last week? So D&D is what you've heard of Dungeons and Dragons though, right?
Yes, of course. Yes.
So that's a TT tabletop RPG. So RPGs can be in video games. There are people who LARP, which are those people that you see with foam swords. Yes. And I have a couple of friends who are professional LARPers who have a tavern and everything. It's really, Rob is like, I did all this. I know it. I have this.
I've gone LARPing. Not for me, but I've tried it.
Well, who cares? It's fucking awesome. It's an experience. It's like Renaissance Fair on a different level.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh my God. Yeah. The abilities that people have. And that's where I actually developed an inkling or desire to just build my own chainmail shirt. And I got to the point where I was just taking regular
chainmail. You know, like
just a chainmail vest. Okay. Yeah. So what I started doing was spinning wire on a metal dowel and then cutting it to make my own. But that's a labor intensive process. So I started buying my own. And I'm just doing the 4-in-1 pattern. It's just one of those things where I'm totally ADD. So I'll start on it and I'll get like a nice strip and then just go, next project. But the strips keep growing and eventually I'm going to fashion them together and have my chain shirt. Hopefully before Z-Day. I need that extra protection.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
Y'all
trying
already?
Oh, yeah, I'm trying to get them on there. Yeah. We all artists, man. We gonna have this like
Bro, me and my man Kyle, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now.
Shit.
I gotta lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
That's really
Z-Day.
What is Z-Day? I don't know what Z-Day is either.
Z-Day, that's when the zombie apocalypse starts. That's day zero of the zombie apocalypse.
Oh, holy.
Oh, okay.
Holy. I should have known. Okay. I should have known.
Yeah, he was speaking nerd, Jessica. You should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we are knowledge. Various degrees of nerd. We need to acknowledge that. There are various degrees and iterations.
I was just going
to
say, there's different dialects. Jess there's
is
different dialects.
Nerd.
Oh, that's a huge compliment coming from you.
Right?
Listen, I'm going to put that on a quote on my website, hardcore nerd. I am from the greater Los Angeles area, but my hometown is really Chatsworth, which is in the Valley, which is like everyone hates the Valley.
Something that we can't Google about you.
Yes, it is.
That's
here's why.
We can't Google.
Yeah. Yes, you know, you can, because where I'm from is the porn capital of America. So
porn capital.
People know this shit about me. I'm telling you, people who know me know this about me.
Oh my God. I would have discussed that. I would have loved to discuss it.
Well, I'll discuss it right now. My point is everything I can do can be hardcore because of being from that town.
There you go.
The first commercial I ever did. Environment. The first commercial I ever did was selling sex products. One of them was like an anal butt plug and like sex stuff.
No way.
I'm not kidding. For
I was actually going to ask you what other voiceovers you know, what other commercials you've done.
We miss out on all of this goodness. We miss out on all of this
it's
goodness.
Because Neo next over here is like, shut up, stop talking, we gotta go. It's 10 minutes. Stop.
There's so many if you would have let me talk.
They talk too long in the quick fire. It's not my fault.
And you're like, oh, I'm gonna add another section. I was like, you don't have space for it, my man. Like, you don't, you can't. But
like I was trying to tell everybody to shut up at some point. I'm like, come on, guys. Yeah, you know, it's quick fire. Shut up.
I got it. I understand. It's not fun.
Listen with you, by the way. We can go over for the porn background. We can
we go over as long as you want right now. I want some porn background.
We can go over for the porn background.
I worked in a deli.
Sure.
So basically, I was born in the Valley. I was born in Granada Hills. We spent like my first couple years there. And then we moved to Chatsworth, which there is the right side of the tracks and the wrong side of the tracks. Mm-hmm. We were on the right side of the tracks for some time. And then the wrong side of the tracks, literally lived on the other side of the train tracks, was like Hell's Angels, like neo-Nazis. It was very like weird, like drugs. I know. As early as like 5 years ago, I was in Chatsworth and someone was driving down the street with a Confederate flag on their like dually truck. It's like backwards Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Very weird. Yeah. And also plenty of like fine people, but like also a lot of meth users, but you would never know it. Also, Smokey Robinson lives up in the hills over there. Dr. Dre used to live in a different part of, like, I'm not kidding. Chatsworth is one of the weirdest remote. It used to have a lot of filming done. A lot of the hills that you see that are used to be like Iraq or, you know, Star Trek kind of are over in the Simi Valley area. Cool. It's very interesting. It's got a lot of history. There's also Hi-Ho Silver, the Rogers Ranch. I know there's a ranch where they used to film that fucking show. I swear to God. So I worked in a deli for 8 years. Everyone knew my family because we were, first of all, like gorgeous kids, four kids. My dad, loudmouth Italian. My mother was like the babe from Chatsworth. So we're like not just from, we didn't just move to Chatsworth. My mom was like Chatsworth royalty, which is not something to lord over. So I worked in this deli. Everyone would come, Jessica, how's your brother? Blah, 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 blah. Whatever. I would like date guys and we'd come back into the valley and say hi to me. Like everyone would stop me at Western Bagel or something and be like, how are you? How's your dad? Whatever. The porn people would come in to eat post porn production. And
because they're hungry.
They're just humans. There was one time, this one guy, he would bring in three different girls every time he'd come in. So like there would be something they did. They're wearing, you know, their spaghetti strap and they're like stilettos. We had to tell one lady to lift up her shirt because it was a family establishment and her nipple was hanging out. 100%. And one of my best customers, my buddies, was like a foot fetish dude. And then this one guy named, that's, I think his name was Van. Well, right. I had heard stories about him too before that came out. So one guy, I think his name was Van Johnson. His first name was definitely Van. And since I've seen him in a couple of porns, I'm like, oh, that fucking. He came up to me. 100%. 100%. He would come in wearing makeup to the deli. Like,
you're gonna have me looking this guy up. Van Johnson.
Not Van Jones.
Window, Neo.
I wish I had learned about incognito sooner, but anyway, I digress. He came up to me and goes, Jessica, you know, you'd be a lot prettier if you wore makeup.
Oh, wow.
And he said that.
I know. Yes. And I went to my dickhead of a manager. I was like, can you believe he would like sit down and eat with these guys? And I said, can you believe Van just said that to me? He's like, Jessica, he's used to seeing hookers, so don't worry. Like, he was like, all right.
He's give a fuck. Like, Van about to get got. Offended. Like, whatever.
There's a lot of regret about working in that deli, mostly because I was too young to tell dudes to fuck right off. Like, from a young age, my butt got a lot of attention and it was grabbed several times underage, you know, and I know every woman under the sun has a different molestation story or whatever. And it took a certain amount of times that happening for me to finally go, fuck you, and like stand up for myself. In the deli setting or like in a working setting, you feel, I felt like oddly obligated to like not say something because I'm in the service position. And if I was working in a deli right now, I'd either get fired or punch somebody on my way out. And it's the, so you know what I mean?
It's the same. You know, I've been a sports journalist for over 2 decades, a white male dominated industry. So it's the same thing. Like when I, you know, as much as my personality is in your face, no nonsense, I wasn't necessarily like that when I first started, you know, coming out of college.
Because you'd lose a job if you were that way.
You'd lose a job, but you're also intimidated and not used to an abundance of attention like that, vulgar attention like that. And so I've definitely, you know, come a long way in, you know, standing my ground. I was very in the beginning like, oh my God, what do I say? Because in my head, I want to cut this man's throat. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I can say that. You know, without, I'm the new kid, you know.
Well, and there wasn't a lot of protection for women or people of color to stand up for themselves.
Exactly. Not a lot of women representation, not a lot of female representation. So over the years, I kind of gained my voice, probably to a fault, with, as some of my editors would say. But yeah, I totally get where you're coming from. I totally get it.
But then, especially in your field, you can have the assholes that are outspoken that aren't going to lose their job because that's their personality, or we accept them for being like, so I'm an outspoken, vulgar, crazy person on the internet. And that's
me too.
Fault. Well, and I love it, but I'm going to lose a job sooner than the guy that's talking about loving butts. And I can't talk about being a sex positive person as soon as that guy can without people going, oh, she is so not ladylike or something like that. So a lot of, I'm trying to find the balance. Like we were talking about earlier, like trying to find the balance of like, where does my personality and where does my energy, where do I want to put my energy? Should I tell people that the first thing I did was a sex commercial? It's the reality though. I did that for $700. And am I going to lose a Disney job in the good future money. Because I did that? It was good money at the time. I went to New York. It was great. But like, there's another.
I get what you're saying and I understand it. I think for me, it was just, how do I temper myself in not being the angry Black woman? Because I'm not angry. Mm-mm. But I will be the first person to cuss your ass out. And you are
fighting against a stereotype where people, A, aren't comfortable with being called out, and B, anytime someone speaks up for themselves, especially with women too, right? They're bitchy as opposed to bossing attack. You.
Yeah. Exactly. Correct. And I assign that to you as well, you know, being white, being a beautiful young white woman working in LA, there's this idea that, okay, she's just happy to be here. You know, she can't speak on behalf of herself or what she's thinking. You know, so it has a range, a variety of range.
Totally. That's why I love intersectionality though, too, right? Is the ability to go, we have some similarities. I recognize where we cross over and where I don't have the say though, too. And I will say, to be fair, the more outspoken, the more true I've gotten to like center with what I love and who I like to work with, the more I attract that, the less I work with assholes. The more I work with people that are like-minded, the more I can talk to people about, hey, that actually wasn't cool with me. I approach every artistic endeavor, like we were talking about, how do I do it all? And I don't do it all. I have friends that I work with. I approach every artistic endeavor saying, at the very least, all I ask is that you come to me first and say there's a problem, because I'm sure there's going to be. How can we get through that first?
Have you experienced the Harvey Weinsteins of the industry?
So I'm going to be honest. I was scared of it. I was raised to be afraid of it. So I was raised in the Valley. And so when I started to realize that something that I wanted to do was attainable because of how close I was to it, I wanted to, we had an agent living across the street. This woman, her daughter was in Wonder Years, Sabrina the Teenage Witch. She was very successful. Oh, wow. Yeah. So we went to go meet their agent and the guy took us into the room. We were like 10 or 11, me and my brother. We were cute kids. And my dad was uncomfortable with having us not in the room as him, 100%. But at the same time, it scared us. It scared me. Like I thought the first audition I was going to go on, there will be a couch there and someone's going to ask me if I'm going to go do what they want me to do. Mm-hmm. So that kind, that was one, you know, how we create obstacles and excuses for ourselves, especially when we're like afraid to achieve the success. Mm-hmm. That was one of them. But there's been a couple times where where dudes have been sleazy around me. I also am not bringing this energy. There are women who, I had a friend who literally said, hey, you could tell people that you just want to sleep around and get, but make sure you get the contract first. He's like, I've given women the advice, get the contract signed and then sleep with the guy. That's like one of the sleaziest things I've ever heard from someone I know. It's good advice if that's what you're going to do. Even my father, he's like, you know how you get famous? Go to Culver City, dress up really nice, bring a friend of yours and go talk to the guys there. And I'm like, fuck. He's not, that is one way to do it, I'm sure.
It's not wrong, but it is wrong. It's not wrong advice, but
it boggles my mind, I guess. That kind of transactional world, while I know it exists, the idea of it, super, super boggles. From an early age, I knew that there was certain lines I was never going to cross, because if you're not your standards, then you're nothing, right? Yeah. If you don't have your morals. And I don't want to sleep with someone I hardly even know or like. So why would I go down on somebody that I can't even stand? So that was not a value that I was comfortable shirking.
Negotiating,
correct. Yeah.
I think with a lot of women in the industry, you know, with you, Jessica, with you, Gianni, with myself kind of on the media side, working with a lot of men, it's the expectation of availability. The expectation that you don't own your body, that, you know, you're out here and you are a woman and you're attractive. And so you should anticipate this type of energy. You should anticipate, you know, guys, whether they are your boss, your agent, you know, whatever, you should anticipate this type of reaction. And that was something that was difficult for me to deal with early in my career, because I didn't anticipate it.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Oh, it shouldn't happen to you.
Yeah. It blew my mind. And thankfully for me, I had women around me in the business who kind of like shook me and was like, okay, you are, you know, a strong woman in all of these other areas, but you're naive when it comes to this. And they were the ones who were like, no, you have to report this. You do not have to be, you know, subjugated to this. But not everyone has that. And so, yeah, it's something that I'm always cognizant of when it comes to, I'm in charge with a lot of interns in my job, and I'm constantly telling them, don't do this, don't accept that, talk to me if someone approaches you like this, because it's still very prevalent. And it's not a good story to tell, it's not a good conversation to have, but it's very relevant, it's very real.
So since we have three women on here in the industry, so I want to ask, because I was watching Dave Chappelle's comedy show last night that he just released.
Oh my god! I haven't seen it yet.
Which was intense. It was intense, but he talked a lot about Me Too. So I'm curious: has the Me Too movement been effective in your mind?
I have so much to say. No. I can jump in. Okay, go ahead. Good. Let's see.
All right. Yes and no.
Yes.
I want to hear Jessica. Let's hear Jessica.
So there's a lot of people that complain that it swung too far in the direction. This is the conversation that's being had with a lot of the change that's happening civilly and, you know, social justice wise, where it's like, oh, it's going too far that way. It's going too far that way. And in some ways, if a guy hits on a girl, should he lose his job? But if he, you know, sexually assaults a girl, should he lose his job? So we'll get to that point where the pendulum swings back and it becomes a normal thing where people can actually report the right kind of thing and things can be changed. Essentially what I'm trying to say is, in a long-winded way, it is good because now I can say fuck that to the right person and someone will actually listen.
They support you.
Whether it's out of fear or not or whatever, it's, you still good need point. It's still better than to go like it was for me in the deli business. Or when I had this producer ask me, oh, are you a natural redhead? When they're really asking if my crotch is red or not. Mm. And I could not. I know. It took me a long time to know that.
Now that just really, I didn't even think that. But now that makes sense.
But I've heard that before.
I understood it right away because it's 100%. Just, that's that transactional nature of it.
Well, yeah, that
I picked up the goods before. Yeah.
I had another producer put on my jacket because he was cold. And he really just wanted, and he was also like hanging out in the room where everyone was like trying on wardrobe for a print shoot. And I'm like, this fucking guy. It was like right when I was like waking up to like losers, and he took my jacket and he's like, I hope you don't mind. And I was like, I fucking do, man. You didn't like,
yeah, I do.
This is me.
Yeah, I do.
I don't know who you are. So at the end of the day, it's a hard fought thing. But it does make for a better precedent to say, you know what, Joe, I don't like being treated that way. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to a place where, because I'm actually amazed, Lizzie, that you weren't conditioned to that kind of workplace. Because on the converse, I was conditioned to be flirty, be womanly to get my way, and be aware that men were going to hit on me without abandon. And that's just like something I had to accept. And
I don't
so
even
I
know how I deal with that as if I with my daughter, like I don't how would
you
that
educate
would
her? And he, even though my dad educated me, he miseducated me. He overeducated me. He's like, well, there's certain men that aren't going to take no for an answer. There are certain men that will only have this in mind. So that in a weird way, by him training me about some men that are disrespectful, it still made me feel like the onus was on me to correct their behavior. Or if they took advantage of me, it's because I didn't say no soon enough, or I put myself in a position. So there's no right way except for creating a
safe environment.
A dialogue. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, she needs to know she has unconditional love from you and that she can come talk to you about shit. I think it's about all you can do with your kid.
I think
for me, I grew up with a very complicated family background, but one where I grew up in a two-parent household and I was extremely close to my dad. I think for me, the focus was on just relating to the world on a business front, not necessarily in the intimate or opposite sex, you know, relationships that you would have, just getting an education, getting a job, you know, functioning that way. And I do have a history of sexual abuse. But I think at some point, it was just like, okay, we're not going to focus on this. We don't want her to continuously think about this. We want her to think about how she can strive beyond that and work to, you know, graduate from high school with honors, go to college, do all of these other things. And so it never occurred to me. It just never occurred to me. And even when I, you know, was assigned, you know, these sports beats or projects, I went into those things thinking I was going to be treated the same. Like I was so naive. Mm-hmm. And then I got, you know, to the door of the locker room and was told this, or was presented a story and was trying to report the story, but then was told, well, you know, or in the locker room was treated a certain way. Like it was completely different. And it really did. Again, I've always thought of myself as someone who is very quick-witted, very savvy, very smart. But when I initially was put in those situations, it took me a minute. Like I had to pause.
Yeah.
And again, it was my girlfriends who were around me who were like, okay, you need to get out of your la-la land. Daddy is no longer here to protect you because my dad died, you know, right before graduation. I didn't have a good relationship with my mom. You have to start think, get out of your fantasy idea of who you are and how you're going to navigate through life and command your presence. And
did the Me Too movement trigger you in a way? Like, do you feel like it triggered anything?
It triggered me in different ways because I think as a Black woman, we haven't been represented in Me Too. Like a lot of people don't know that the founder of Me Too was a Black woman. Like her voice has been so suppressed throughout this movement. It's ridiculous. But also when we hear about these stories, it's not about our stories. And I think the movement itself is responsible for that. But also I think the Black community is responsible for that. Because as a community, we don't necessarily accept our stories as victims. as women. A lot of times we tend to, you know, gravitate towards what the man is saying. And so I'm kind of back and forth with Me Too, because I don't think if I were in that situation right now, I don't think I would have been represented. I don't.
Johnny, what are your experiences so far?
With like things as far as sexual abuse, or you mean like with Me Too?
Or even your experiences as growing up, or
as a young actress,
as an actress, as a model.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of experiences. I think that you guys know me, I'm such a adaptable, go with the flow person that like, and as you guys were talking, as Jessica and Liz were talking, it's something that it not only throws you off, but mm-hmm. then it cripples you a little mm-hmm. bit. Well, me specifically, because yeah. I'm such a sweet person. I'm very strong. I'm a very strong-minded person, but I'm also I'd like to let people take charge. I'm more of a submissive person. So in those circumstances, for me, it was even more crippling. And then just growing up with like a history of abuse and stuff like that. So I think that the Me Too movement specifically, I think that it was, I'm gonna be honest, I don't know. I just feel like it was kind of a little bit of a gimmick. I think that, and it's not like, I'm not trying to be a conspiracist or anything. I just feel like it was a gimmick. I feel like they took an important thing that women naturally go through all the time, and they made light, light of it, but they didn't take it as serious as it's supposed to be.
Follow up.
Yep. So what should be done
because
different?
People are now joking about it. Like it's a, maybe.
It sounds like from Jessica, just to jump in. So it sounds like from Jessica, she's saying she feels that it's helped a little bit. The Z saying, again, minimal help is to her as well, because at least it's changed some points of views. But what would you do differently, Gianni? Or Jessica, if you want to jump in.
Jessica.
Well, I remember when everyone was posting during Black Lives Matter reaching the hilt of fervor, right? Mm-hmm. Finally, people waking up to understanding about it. And I felt really like I was going to be a poser. If I was going to be like, this is important, da, 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 da. I was afraid to post socially about it to look like I was just on the bandwagon. And I have a friend who's really strong in activism. And she said, it doesn't matter if it's posery. It's finally being talked about. It's finally viral. You almost can't get anything done as far as activism until it's gotten to be viral. So a lot of activism work is to do these flash mob things, or to sit in Congress, or to, you know, unfortunately use someone's loss of life as a catalyst for people to pay attention to. And Harvey Weinstein, right, is like was really the reason why Me Too shot up to prevalence, because of what a whale that was. So I'm going to 100% agree with you. Worst of the worst.
Yeah.
But also, if you're going to ask me more about that, the fucking lawyers that had these clauses for anyone that went to go visit him, basically, there was like true devil work going on there. It really was. Uh-huh. And it also goes back to what you were talking about earlier with the Catholic Church and the protection of we're just going to move them to a different parish. And it's all very, 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 very bad. And there's so many problems in this world, but you do need the sensationalism to finally make people care about it. All of a sudden, I think Van Jones was talking about it, that, you know, inequality was important to people, but it was like number 17 on their totem. And then George Floyd is killed and now it becomes number one because it's being covered. So, and there's a lot of people who feel like Black Lives Matter could have been better, I don't even have that opinion, but there's criticism everywhere of everything.
Sure.
So while I do agree it was not a perfect or flawless thing, and I think they had to have a CEO of Me Too step down because she had like abuse allegations against her or something like that. But I'm misstating, but she had to step down because it wasn't, she's like, she fucked up doing something. The awareness is better. And then what we choose to do with the catalyst in our own lives to educate ourselves, it helped men, some men to go, wow, ooh, did I do this? Was I an aggressor?
I'll admit it made me look introspectively to see if I were doing some of those things. I'll be honest. I mean, even listening to you now, I'm wondering, you know, growing up as a teenager, you know, I always grew up as a teenager looking at women as sex objects. I was like, man, she is cute. And she's, look at that butt on her. And
and that's not your fault. You were conditioned to be
right,
that way.
Exactly.
And I was raised in a very prejudiced home. And so I had to look at a lot of things that, oh, wait, what is my opinion? What was I raised to believe? Or, and that even, that even shifted with, oh, is my value more than how beautiful I am? I struggle constantly with my weight and my visual appeal, and that, and still think that that's why I'm not as successful as I could be. And that's because that's all I'm sold is my value. Anyway,
I also think though that there's a difference between that and the movement becoming a gimmick. And I think that's what a lot of these movements have become now, because they're not
just
as effective anymore. There's money makers, and there's a lot of hypocrisy, and there's a lot of not listening to what the actual victims or the people who are involved and invested in this, what they have to say. I think, unfortunately, Me Too has become a victim of that. Black Lives Matter has definitely become a victim of that. And those aren't the only two organizations.
Think about the Susan G. Komen, like the pink, you know, with cancer.
Exactly.
That's a money maker.
It's all about money. Now.
Exactly. And on the one side, you want it to be a money maker, right? Because you want to attract, you know, people, the attention, people to come in and have awareness, donate.
Yeah.
But on the
flip
side,
when executives are taking most of that money.
Yeah, you don't want it to be an advertising push. You don't want it to be an advertising push.
And Dave Chappelle said it best on his stand-up when to answer your question, Neo, he said, instead of these Me Too movement leaders just doing different things, they should go to their agents, or they should go to their big corporations and take the girl who's busting her ass the most there, like the intern or whoever's there working the hardest, and shoot her ideas. And
that's what Jessica just described. Yeah. That's exactly what Jessica was describing.
Oh, I don't know if I did. But I will say, I don't want to take credit for that brilliant, lovely idea. But I will say this. This is something that I've taken with improv, and I've trained some corporations with it. Like, I went over to Facebook and Amgen, and it's teaching especially project managers, but people that aren't teaching project managers and like higher ups to go, hey, what idea do you have? Let me learn how to not shoot that idea down right away, or listen to your team, because you're really only as strong as the group and however heard your team can be. I to this day, on a different side of like the Me Too thing, even though I know that it's like lifted the veil, like my dad was not wrong to keep us out of the business at a young age, because there are horror stories with kids who are groomed and horrible things. But at the same time, I would have loved to have started sooner, right? Be more successful, or who knows what. But there are still times where I will let men's comfort take precedent over my comfort, because I'm afraid of how this is going to affect me right now on set. Or I'm afraid that I'm not going to be invited back to this comedy club because this dude asked me out and that was totally inappropriate. Or so I don't know who to go to in that situation to go, fuck that guy.
Especially in the industry, because you don't have the same protections that we would have worked
with. As I'm listening to you tell this story, it almost sounds like this was part of the inspiration for your short that you did, What If Job Interviews Were Like Auditions, where the young guy comes in. And you're objectifying him, saying, no, you've got the wrong look. You've got, you know, I thought that was brilliant. It was just like,
It was 100%. Well, because if you really think about it objectively, what we're asked to do in auditions, and I'm sure, Johnny, you could speak to this as well. A friend of my brother's girlfriend has gone to Milan, has gone to all these. I'm sure you like on akin to what she's doing with modeling. She's been on like Italian Vogue. This bitch does shit for free. She's on magazines for free because they call it exposure. So the objectification that we go through, I've learned to not take a lot of the rejection personally. Otherwise, you really can't do this job. But I don't know why they're not hiring me, but they are asking me to show profiles. They need to know something's wrong with my face or not. Or like, and I've been also told that I don't need to lose weight because that's not why they're hiring me. So, like, they don't need me to be a certain thing. but also I look like their ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend or whatever. Like, we don't know what objective things, or like audition breakdowns would be like normal looking, not totally beautiful. Like,
what is that? Just,
what?
You just, okay. It's super strange.
There's aspirational, and then there's average, but still good looking. Like,
wow.
But there's also the other side to that where, and I think I fall in this category where you take the opposite end of the spectrum where you are overly sensitive to male response or male critiqued, and you just go for the jugular. Like, I'm at a point, like, whereas I started out where I was very naive and I was very sensitive to the criticism or the comments. And now I'm just like, fuck you. Yeah. And I go to a different place. So it's both ends of the spectrum. It's both.
Because it's not going to be production that way.
Oh, yeah, it's not. It's
but
it's
you can
not,
be
it's
Christian
not.
Bale and be an asshole on set and still work, right? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, we are gonna call someone a dick. I almost got my ass beat. I was, again, I told you, like, you know, for some reason my ass has gravitated hands that don't belong very many times.
Girl, you need me
life.
To come out there. You need me to come out there and help you. You need me to come out there and help you.
I was outside my improv studio. It was like 2 a.m. outside the bar. There's like a good bar, and then there was a bad bar. And these guys are leaving the bad bar. One guy goes right on my ass, 2 a.m.
No,
and chances are high that I know who is doing that. So I'm like, oh, it's probably, you know, Billy Bob, who I do improv with. But I very quickly realized it wasn't. And I turned around without even thinking, going, you fucking asshole.
Good.
I was so happy. But then a group of 7 dudes turned around who looked like they could have kicked my ass if I was alone. Like, it was all of a sudden became a threatening situation for standing up for myself. Really? As a well, I tend to stand up for things in situations that could get me or someone else hurt because I've chosen to stand up.
That's me every day.
Yeah.
It's finding the balance of that.
Yeah. I think I tend to overcompensate now as I've gotten older. And it's not something that I'm boasting about or I'm proud of. It's just, that's where this environment has taken me. And I'm still trying to find the balance.
Rightfully so though, too. It's like,
and I'm still trying to find the balance. But yeah, I think I'm no longer that naive girl. It's just like, okay, you are going to hear me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no matter how I make you hear me, you're going to hear me.
All right.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap this up.
But one quick thing before we wrap this up. Jessica, you mentioned Smokey Robinson. Did you all know that remember Neo and Rob and Gianni? My sister's name is Jacqueline Robinson. Smokey Robinson is my mom's cousin. Robinson is my mother's cousin.
I'm gonna one up you, apparently.
Never comes to family functions.
Where's he at?
Never comes to family functions.
So my grandmother wrote for Motown. She said that Stevie Wonder knew her by her footsteps and Michael Jackson and the Jackson Five. She has a few albums with her on the B side. Apparently, after she died, my dad and his dad and my brother went backstage to talk to Smokey and said, "Oh, BJ Birdie, that's our mom, grandmother is dead," and he started crying. Apparently. That's not wanting you up. You're still related to the man.
If he ever comes to one of our family reunions, I'm going
to. You can put that to the test. Let's see if that's a true story or not. She was a very soulful, amazingly talented woman. And her story, she has. I'll leave you guys with one more thought. She sat in the lobby of the Capitol building, or like, you know, the Motown building, started playing music, hired 2 women to like sing next to her, and finally someone invited her up to like take a meeting. Meeting with one of these guys who was like one of the main guys, who I can't even remember. There's like 3 main guys in Motown. He was like the lowest on the rung of those 3 guys. And he goes, "You know, Beatrice, you know what? You're not only a great singer-songwriter, you could potentially be on TV. We could potentially sell you as an artist." And she goes, "Oh, that's great. He goes, "Well, I just need to see you without your top on, and then we'll see how it goes from
Will
there.
Will you stop?
Oh my goodness.
And she said, Sounds like a great idea. You take off your pants first, and then we'll go from there. And it goes, I love, yes.
I love
see
that.
See what we're saying?
I like you already.
We're saying.
Right? They're always going to challenge you.
At the very basic of introductions.
That's wow. Awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You can.
I can't thank you, ladies, enough for being a fly on the wall for this conversation, just because really haven't been subjected to anything like that. I've been subjected to some harassment.
I got lots of stories.
But to know that,
and I'm
know,
sure like, Jessica does, that it's I'm such sure a regular Gianni thing. Does.
It's been a fascinating thing, especially with kind men, to have this conversation, because the majority of men are good, and we know that, and they want to be respectful as best as possible. But it's been a very interesting experience sharing these stories and men going, I had no fucking idea. It's almost, we took it so much for granted that we felt like, oh, well, of course everyone knows. It's been a very interesting few years, to say the least.
Again, thank you, Jessica. We're going to have to stay in touch because we're going to have to figure out something because we love you.
I would love, I'll be here anytime this week. I love you all. This is such a lovely, sweet energy. And I love the honesty and the earnestness. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, we're definitely staying in touch with you. We'll figure something out.
Thank you so much. Tune in to CL.